I'm Lucille Miller, and I'm 77 years old. Today is Thursday, June 9th, 2022. I'm in Richmond, Virginia. My partner's name is George Hostetler, and my relationship to him is he is my one-step conversation partner.
And my name is George Hostetler. I'm 74 years old. Today is Thursday, June the 9th, 2022. And I am in Richmond, Virginia. My partner's name is Lucille Miller, and she's my one small step conversation partner.
I wanted to do this interview today because I often have trouble talking to people that differ from the way whose views differ from mine, especially politically. And so I thought that this would be a good opportunity. I also really like to listen to the views and why people hold the views that they do that differ from mine, because I'm constantly questioning my own and want to understand more about this great divide that's happening politically today. What about you, George?
Yes, I wanted to do an interview and have a civil discourse with a person that I don't know. I have many discussions with people I do know, and sometimes they're not really fruitful as I wish they would be. So here's my chance.
Okay, I'm going to read George's bio. I am a white male, 73 years old, college degree. I have lived in Richmond, Virginia for almost 50 years. I was born and raised in a Mennonite family in the Midwest. Most Mennonite families have affinity to social justice issues, and I share them through my upbringing. I thought myself as a liberal until the civil unrest in Richmond in the recent past, 2020. I am somewhere in the center. The civil unrest of the past year has raised many thought-provoking issues, and I look forward to sharing with anyone.
Okay, I'll read Lucille's bio. I grew up in Georgia. Graduated from college in Virginia, an art history major, married, raised two children, returned to school for an MFA in painting and printmaking, and later a MIA with environmental studies focus. I've worked on environmental issues for the past 20 years as a volunteer and with a not-for-profit environmental legal advocacy organization. I work with LWV to encourage voting and media literacy for high school students. Climate change, voting rights, and campaign finance reform are priorities.
In your bio, George, I would be interested in knowing more about your Mennonite upbringing and how that impacted you, the views that you hold today.
I would say the one thing I took away from my upbringing in the Mennonite church and a Mennonite family is that I'm a pacifist. And in other words, I don't believe in war. And many times, sometimes that can be a real struggle for me, not so much with the Vietnamese War, or the war in Vietnam when I was in college. It was easy then, but now with the current events of Russia invading Ukraine, I don't consider myself much of a pacifist. Many other social justice issues and having a global span for caring for the of people with not too many opportunities in the world, as well as local. And I support those with all my heart.
Yeah, that's so are you feeling like that Ukraine had to defend themselves and that was a hard choice because
no,
that means
it was an easy choice that the war was not justified, the invasion was not justified, and so therefore I support even sending them arms.
And would your Mennonite community that you were raised in agree with that? Is that a
well, the community that I grew up in was rather conservative, and so nowadays, depending on the church, but the church I grew up in is what you would call the evangelical, which is tends to be more conservative and politically Republican. So I don't really have any attachment to that part of the Mennonite church.
Yes, okay. It's still with you though in certain ways, but you've grown to see it in a wider perspective, I guess, right. Is what I'm hearing.
Right. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So I would like to ask you, Lucille, your bio is rather diverse, which I admire. You're a teacher, and I admire that even more because they're in short supply these days. And also you're volunteering on environmental issues. Wanted to ask you, what's an MIA?
Oh, it's a Master of Interdisciplinary Studies that I got at VCU. We're so lucky to have VCU here in Richmond, I think, because they don't mind if you come back as an adult. So MIA in environmental studies, you could be a nurse and look at it from a nursing perspective. You could, you know, I looked at it from kind of more protection of air, land, and water perspective. But you could be an architect and look at it from an architectural perspective. And so that's why they call it of interdisciplinary studies, because you could come from any direction to look, think of the environment in terms of whatever you're doing.
Uh-huh.
That makes sense. Just to correct one thing, I'm not actually a teacher. I just volunteer in the Meadowbrook High School system the League of Women Voters.
Well, I still admire you for that.
Thanks.
Working for high school students, especially. Okay. What is LWV?
It's the League of Women Voters.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. Formed right after the women got the vote.
Yes.
And I really just joined them after the last election because it was driving me crazy that it was so hard for people to know what to believe. I mean, when you look at all of the, you know, different kind of cable channels and they're telling different things.
Yes.
And so I wanted to kind of give students a look at how to find reliable information, because you can't be a responsible voter unless you have reliable information.
Right.
So that's my
Are
thought.
These students of voting age or not?
Pardon? Say that again.
The high school students that you work with, as far as voting and media literacy, were they eligible to vote? Were they of voting age or?
Yes. So when I went in the fall, I was mainly talking to them about how to find reliable information, and then just the logistics of voting. And when I went back in the spring, most of them had turned 18 or would be 18 by the November election, so that they could register to vote. So I could help them register too.
Cool.
Yeah.
Great.
Unknown caller.
So sorry, I thought I had turned this off.
That's okay.
Who has been the most influential person in your life, and what did they teach you?
Well, I believe it was my dad who was the most influential person in my life. He has passed away 7 years ago, but I still think about him every day. And probably what he taught me was, first of all, how to work with my hands, because he was a carpenter. So at an early age, I learned how to use my hands and work with my hands. And then he encouraged me to go to college. And so I did. So that, you know, he taught me that thinking with my mind was really important too. And he taught me the values of any parent would teach, but discipline and organization were probably two of his influences on me.
Oh, that's a neat story. Yeah, I like that. How old was he when he died?
He was, I think he was 96 years old and going on 97. He missed 97 by just a couple months, but he had a real full and productive life, and with a longevity I would only hope to subscribe to, but we'll see.
Well, I love the working with your hands, because they're obviously, as an artist, I like to do that too. And I was able to introduce my grandson to, he had broken his collarbone, and his mom said, just get him out of the house, please. And so I took him to a place called Build RVA, and he just took to it, and he learned to make bowls on a lathe. And in fact, they were asking this 12-year-old to teach classes and do it. And so it was just so much fun watching him. And, I love that. That was something that was part of your life too.
Where was the Build RVA located?
It's over on the other side of Broad Street, and gosh, I don't know what, you know. You can Google Build RVA, and you can. They just have all the machines there that you could want to build anything you want. It's really a cool place.
Yeah, that's, I am retired, but I really aspire to wood turning, and I just haven't had a chance to pursue that yet. So a great opportunity that he learned to turn some wood on the lathe.
Yes, it was really fun. Thank you. Oh, go ahead.
Sure. You're welcome. Yeah, Lucille, who was the biggest influence in your life? What person?
Well, I thought about that, and I think it was Rachel Carson, because I grew up loving to spend time in the summer at the beach, and this was a Florida beach, and I really loved the pelicans. And over the years, I saw the numbers diminish, and my mother then introduced me to Rachel Carson's Silent Spring. And it was heartbreaking in a way to see that what man was doing to nature with this. And so I, having read her Silent Spring book, I think one of the things that I took with me and that has been an influence is her determination to tell the truth, even though she had threats on her life for doing it. I mean, business was just ready to pounce on her because it was a big money maker for them. And she stayed true to what she knew was her findings, that the DDT was thinning the eggshells so that the baby pelicans couldn't hatch. And she didn't back off of it. So that's her influence remains with me always.
Mm-hmm. Good. I know my let me go this way here. Being brought up in a Mennonite household, we were in a farming community, Central Ohio. And so a lot of farmers. And so we didn't really get the Rachel Carson types. As a matter of fact, I was much later in life that I heard about her. But these people depended on a good set of crops for their livelihood. And sometimes a weed killer, the DDT they used to justify an increase in the crop yields. So of course that was outlawed, and of course, but you still have issues today of Roundup and other GMO and the type of seeds that you got to buy from Monsanto and all that. So that's where I see that today, and it's kind of a tug of war for me. I can see both sides.
All right. We've got a new question. Could you briefly describe in your own words your personal political values?
Politically, I mean, I'm an independent, if you want to talk about politics, but other personal values, I would say I am concerned about the common good. And I think that our society ought to be such that we do keep in mind the good that we need to extend to people that don't have. So that's, and I don't call myself a socialist. I mean, I'd be far from it. Really, but I think for the most part, my concern is for the common good.
So, can you just explain common good just a little, just elaborate on that just a little bit?
Yes, I guess you could call it people that are disadvantaged. You need to be able to help those people, take care of those people. You have poverty issues, especially here in the city of Richmond. And you have other issues where all the in the school situation is not as good as it should be. Even in helping people in Richmond in the projects and there in the housing. So I think we need to have a set of policies that address those issues of people as far as housing, food, shelter, education, and so forth, and not just bypass and try to short these people what we really should be extending to them.
How should that... In your mind, where should that policy come from? I mean, should it come from local, state, federal?
You have I guess all of them, federal certainly, state and local, and of course it's always a tug of war. But what I just mentioned, I think, are mostly local politics, but certainly have it on the state and certainly that on the federal, and each one of those different levels have, I would think, certain obligations for the common good.
Thank you. I think one of the problems with school funding is that it often comes from the taxes in that school district. If you have a really poor school district, they're going to get less income. And there's some on the state level, there's some ways that the state tries to help fund, but maybe it's not enough. I haven't looked at that in detail, but thank you for that.
Yeah, I've heard, and if I could add, yes, in the city of Richmond, where you have maybe a lower base of property taxes, then you have the school district is getting money from the state based on that level of property taxes. So the formula is such that the richer municipalities get a bigger share of the state money. So
I exactly think that's
the situation in Richmond.
Yes.
And how about your personal political values? Can you share those?
I really believe in equality before the law. I mean, you know, it's just, I think that legally, we haven't always had the equality that I would like to see, especially with people of color haven't gotten a fair shake. Women sometimes haven't gotten a fair shake. And I think that we just need to concentrate on that a lot. So, you know, I see myself as a moderate Democrat. I'm not way out on the edge thinking that everything should be funded. But I do believe that we should give each person a fair shake. I think that we also really have to look out. I mean, these are the reasons that I consider myself a moderate Democrat, is that, climate change is, I do think that we have to address that, and it's not being properly addressed. And it is pretty easy to start addressing. It's not impossible. Environmental protections, of course, has always been big for me, and Democrats have tended to be more interested in environmental protection. I also see that some of the reasons that we have trouble with this is the influence of big business in our politics. I mean, they can give so much to help get candidates elected, and really more than we can give as individuals. And so I think that the Citizens United decision was really flawed. So I would like to see that their influence on elections reduced, and I just find gun violence to be abhorrent. Mm-hmm. And that again, there are easy fixes without taking away the guns of people who want to go hunting I find it horrendous that that's not being dealt with. And then voting rights, I think the things like gerrymandering and extended time for voting, Democrats tend to be more interested in those than the Republican Party does. And then, of course, as you were saying, public education equality, I think is really important. There are children at Meadowbrook who, I'm sure that they leave school and go to work, and they're tired, they're sleepy when they're in school. And so I'm not talking about all the children, but there are some that are clearly very stressed. And I think that we need that equal funding in all schools.
Right.
So that's why I'm a Democrat.
Yeah, if I could back up. Now, you describe yourself as a moderate Democrat.
Yes.
I describe myself as an independent leaning left of center. So
right.
I don't see that much distance between our political stance. So I'm like, where's the civil discourse? Where's the heated discussions we could have here? Because
I haven't really found any yet, because I think we're pretty much in agreement.
Let me ask you, if I could, the first thing you mentioned was equality. So what is the difference, if I could ask, what is the difference between equality and equity? Choose any issue.
Oh, gosh, I haven't thought about that.
Could I interject? Could I?
Yes, please.
Fill you with one issue that has been predominant here in the Richmond area over the past year or two is the governor's school. And they had found out that there was a very low percentage of African Americans enrolled at the governor's school. and the governor's school being in a only had like 2 or 3% of the students were African American, whereas a school is right in the middle of a city, which has almost a majority of African American students. And why isn't the percentage larger? So is that a matter of equality? Like these 2% have been equal with the remainder, and by equity, does that mean we reduce the standards for the entrance just so we have more African American students? Or are those? Go ahead.
That's a really good question. I think that the governor's school should first make sure that their testing doesn't just favor people who've grown up in more affluent circumstances, and then to actually. I don't think that they should lower their academic standards, because that's what the governor's school is about. But I do think that they should probably reach out more to the African American community to find students,
right,
so that it can be more. I mean, there are probably many students that don't know about that. I mean, if you go to a more affluent school, they're talking to their students about, you know, in say middle school, about where you're going to go to high school, and do you want to go to the governor's school? And so maybe that doesn't happen, because I mean, I think that there are plenty of students of color that could benefit and contribute to the governor's school, but they just don't do it. They don't have the infrastructure to let them know about it. So
right.
That answer is they should keep the high standards that they have, but seek out more diversity in their student body.
Right. My thinking was that they should provide more opportunity in those middle school years to identify students with the ability and then train them.
Yes.
But as far as I'm concerned, as far as I understand, one entrance exam, so to speak, if you're in the eighth grade and you want to go to governor's school, you take a test based on 10th grade knowledge and teaching. And of course, that's where the struggle is. So I believe that they dropped that as a requirement for entry. They have another set of requirements for entry. So while I'm not really sure, it's my impression that they have dropped they've lowered some of the standards to make it easier for African American students to enter the school.
Yeah,
so I think
I don't know about lowering standards, that I would agree with that, but I do think that there are other ways that you can identify children who would benefit from and contribute to.
Right.
That Absolutely. Curriculum.
And that happens in the public school system, which I think is lacking.
Exactly.
Today.
There you go. I think that working in the middle school system is the way to address that.
Right. Well, and I think you, another political value, I think you mentioned the environmental issues, and I mostly subscribe to almost all of those issues. Currently, I mean, you look at gas prices, and what are you going to do? I mean, people just can't go out and buy electric cars, so that'd be better for the environment. So we're always subject to fossil fuels issue, which is one big thing for the environment. What do you think about that? I mean, how do you define the struggle in environmental issues?
Well, we've become so dependent on our cars that you know, whole infrastructure is based on the highway system. It makes it hard to move away from that. But I do think that we're taking steps to move away. Most major car manufacturers are going to be heading to electric as the way to go. And, you know, I drive electric just because as soon as I felt like it was at a point where I could count on it, you know, that's the way I went, just because first of all, I hated filling stations. That's where I just plug it in at home. But that's a process. I just think we have to be taking those steps to move toward that, rather than saying it doesn't matter. Climate change is, you know, we're just not going to pay attention to it. And we're not going to worry about whether the, you know, water's clean with, some of the things I worry about is, you know, when this fracking, they inject a lot of poisonous chemicals into the ground and it can get into the groundwater. And water is vital to life. I mean, it's just we're 90% water. So, you know, if we don't protect our water, I mean, honestly, I look at what's happening out west and I think our future wars are going to be over water rather than fuel. So we're just smart to take care of it.
Right.
So I don't know how to, I just think that I just want to see us moving in the right direction. I can remember exactly where I was when George Bush the elder said, oh, we're not going to join the Paris Climate Accord. I mean, you know, it was like, why not? Why not? Yeah. Why not get us moving in the right direction? We've given up a lot of important years to do that. And I think that there are a lot of people who say, well, it's going to impact my life in a way I don't like. But boy, is it going to impact your children and their children's lives if we don't do something about it. So.
But I think the climate, I can't struggle for the word, you mentioned it, the climate accords. So we did join the one accord, the Paris Accord under Obama.
Right.
But then we have a new president, Trump, who took us out of it. So that set us back. But I think one concern was that, you know, the United States is the biggest polluter, so we're going to have to front all this money, a big, huge hunk of money to pass among other countries in the world. And I think that was a concern. So, you know, again, another tug of war. But I really believe, yes, that we should be, and I think we are now, a member of the Paris Accord.
Yes.
one thing I noticed, we were in Switzerland for a week here a month ago, and all your travel is by train and bus and boat. Very few people had cars, and it was amazing. And all the trains were electric. I mean, you're up in the hills, in the most barren of places, and you're traveling on a train and it's electric. And I'm not sure how they produce all that electric, but everything's so compact over in Europe. So it's a different thing. And of course, the reason they don't own cars because gas is $10 a gallon or something compared to our $5. But the country is old and compact. It's highly dense, but it's it's not large in footprint. Here in this country, we have a huge amount of land. And so, you know, all electric trains in Europe and in the world wouldn't get us from here to there in this country, because we're so, we have such low density, even, you know, outside the bigger cities and everything. So that's one thing I struggle with. So it just brought to me what the differences are between Europe and the United States. far as transportation and environmental issues?
Well, we do have CARTAs that could really benefit from electric trains, like that the Northeast CARTA from Boston to. And they've got that fast train, but they're not electric. I mean, those electric trains are incredible. And so it makes sense. And actually, Biden is trying to, in that infrastructure bill, promote better transportation, but he can't get it passed in the Senate. So, you know, I think there's a huge problem with the way the Senate is, with you have to have, you know, the supermajority to get anything passed. And we're just deadlocked because of this. And,
so anyway, do you think we ought to do away with the filibuster?
I do. I mean, I just because we can't get anything done. It seems like to me that I'm not sure why it's there.
I think that was to allow the party not in power to have some say in important legislation. So back in the day, if it was not an equal amount, say it was 60-40, then either party, the minority party and the minority would still have a say and be able to debate the issues without just being like run over.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, what do you think? Do you think that the filibuster should be eliminated?
Well, I think back in the day when you had either your majority was either party, but they, you know, might have been that the majority might be 60% and the minority 40%. And they could do deals and everything worked fine. Nowadays, it's really 50-50, and nobody wants to do any compromise. So you're just not going to get anything done. As compared to the House, everything is a simple majority. And so if you're the majority party, then you get to pass whatever you want to pass. That doesn't work in the Senate. I'm not sure what the solution is. It's really a tough choice about the filibuster.
And so you're not sure which one you would do on that?
Yeah, I'm not sure which. I think there ought to be compromise. That's one thing I'm really disappointed in, that there's not compromise. But, and I mean, from either party. And it just, everybody sticks to their gun, so to speak, the principles in this. So anyway.
Well, the result is that, so when you have that 50-50 Senate, not much gets done.
Right.
And maybe that's, I don't have really strong feelings on that, but I do think that, mainly just because there are things that I see as being critical, such as gun control, that get passed and that can't get past the Senate.
Right.
So, but that's not fair to just because I'm really strong on that issue.
I'm strong on that issue too, and probably on the same side of the fence on that one, especially growing up being a pacifist, I've never really owned a gun for defensive purposes, and so I wish you were for gun rights all the way so we could have a really good conversation, but I think we're pretty much in agreement. Even with all the civil unrest right outside my front door in 2020, 2021, you know, I hadn't even the faintest thought of going out and buying a gun. And so there's both sides of the coin. I could see that people in favor of gun rights, they have the Second Amendment, but I think they've even misinterpreted even what the Supreme Court said about the Second Amendment. And so I don't know, it's just befuddling me. But hopefully the Senate here will have a breakthrough here sometime soon to be able to get something done.
Yeah, I'm afraid it's going to be too modest for my liking, right. But so I've just gotten a notice that we have 10 minutes left, and I'd like to just use that to ask you about what are your hopes, dreams, fears, and aspirations for our country. That's a big one, isn't it? But just to pick up on a few things that you want to see happen during your lifetime.
Yeah. Well, as far as the country, I think on the federal level, I think of elections. I just hope that we can find very good leaders to lead our country forward. And so to me, it wouldn't matter which party they belong to, as long as they can show that they're real strong and independent thinkers. And so that's my hope, my aspiration, that we don't give up on democracy, that we spend every day doing what we can to strengthen our democracy. And I think we need that. I'm looking forward to watching TV tonight with the live session of Congress, the House, I guess. And I think that's it. I've got grandchildren, and I just hope that they have the opportunity to have the same opportunities I had growing up.
Such as, specifically?
Well, education. I know my all three of my children are very financially independent. They're doing very well. So they probably had a better life than I did. And I just hope that the grandchildren can have a better life even than their parents. So I don't see a lot of that, but that's what I aspire to, that my grandchildren have the opportunities to have a meaningful life. How do you feel, if I could ask?
Well, I would really like to see there become more universal civil and informed discourse. So people not just saying, I mean, even if you say something politely that's totally false, I'm looking for an interest in hearing all different sides and making informed choices and being able to express it civilly. Yes. And I mean, to start in our government, and the government sets the tone for the rest of the population, and they're setting a horrible tone right now.
Right.
And so when it becomes okay just to say, put out false information, I think that's that just the rest of society feels that way.
Right.
So
I agree.
Let's see what else that we haven't talked about. I'm disturbed by a lot of the voter suppression that's happening in this country. Mm-hmm. And I want to see us move toward 90% participation of voters, and because that's where you really get people electing representatives that represent them. But I also would like to see campaign finance reform and making it easier for people to vote, because there's certain people who, you know, work all day, and they just then in minority areas where the ruling party doesn't want them to vote, they can have to travel a long way and wait in long lines to vote. And so I think that we won't have a truly representative government until we get is close to universal, much closer to universal voting than we have now. So that would be a dream that I would have. The other thing I would like to see is some stops on media outlets putting forward false information. I mean, it's confusing to me because I thought we had laws that you couldn't, you know, couldn't write things about people that weren't true. So I remember when Abigail Spanberger, who was representing Henrico for a while, and I just like her a lot because I think she's honest and in politics for the right reason. And she was running for office the first time, and she had, before she went to work for the CIA, she had been teaching in a school, international school. And someone who graduated from that school years later went on to become a terrorist, and they were blaming her on political ads for siding with the terrorists. I mean, you know, that sort of stuff. I mean, outlets shouldn't be able to run that sort of thing without, you know, being fined and having it taken down. I mean, so it makes it hard to decide if you don't have but so much time. I think we should have 3 months to campaign, and your goal should be to tell who you are and then let the voters decide. But it's become a really bad scene. So those are some of my aspirations.
Yes. Okay. Well, those are lofty aspirations, really. I admire you for that. Good luck with that, huh? Some of them. I know with the recent, you say you're from Georgia. Well, Georgia just had the primary elections. And as far as I know, I'm not really sure, but I thought they said they had a really high turnout rate. And with all their new election laws, they had a high participation. And I guess everybody found a way to get their vote in. I'm not too sure of it. So I still hold out hope that we can do some meaningful. But I tell you, the dirty tricks stuff, that's going to last. Well into the future. I don't pay any attention to TV ads or anything, but it's probably always going to be an issue.
So we have 5 minutes left.
Okay.
Do you have any questions?
Let me see. Can I just ask? Where did you graduate from college in Virginia?
Okay, so the first college that I graduated from was Hollins College.
Oh, and yeah. I
graduated from there because my grandmother went there and my sister went there. And then, you know, when it came time to college, now kids look all over the place. You know, my mother just said, oh, just apply to Hollins. It was a good college for me. I mean, and then my other two degrees were from VCU.
Yes. Right. Cool. Okay. Do you have any questions for me?
Yes. Where did you go to college and what did you major in?
Oh, yes. I went to Ohio State University.
Okay.
And graduated in engineering and never really practiced a day of it my whole life, industrial engineering. But I did apply the principles. Whatever I was doing, I started out in construction management, then on to home building. I had a home building firm here in the Richmond area for about 20 years, and then went into software development with a business firm that was all involved in real estate. And then after that, I had a small franchise business on home services. So I don't know if that, maybe that's more than what you wanted to know, but that's it.
Well, it's interesting though. I have to say, I've just gotten the message that says, please begin to wrap up. And I will say to you that this has been a real pleasure to meet you. I think that we were much more in agreement. I mean, I consider you somebody who is like talking to a good friend that we can agree. on issues. So it's been a great pleasure, and Thank you so much for taking this time with me.
Lucille, and I thank you very much for your time. And I only wish that we were further apart in our belief structures, that we could demonstrate a civil discourse, but I would like talking to a Democrat. So anyway, that's good. Thank you.
Thank you.